Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian, and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's episode is a Q&A where I will be answering questions submitted to me by listeners. If you would like to submit a question for future Q&A episodes, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Happy Friday. I hope everyone's having a great week. I am slightly starting to panic that we only have 5 weeks until New York. It's becoming very real and very close. I think also partly because over the next 3 weeks, I'll have my longest long runs ever that I've ever done in my life. When I was training at the elite professional level, the most I ever ran was 16 miles, which, like, granted, I ran it pretty frequently, and that's definitely far, but I was also at that point running a lot faster. Now I'm going to be running, like, this weekend, I think we'll end up being around 15-ish miles. Joe, my old coach, Joe Bossard, has kind of been helping guide my marathon training a little bit and recommended we go by time for the next 3 weeks. So we're going to do a 2-hour run this weekend. Then we'll go to a 2-hour 15-minute run and then a 2-hour 30-minute run. And that will kind of be our peak. So I'm definitely feeling a little nervous. Those will be the longest amounts of time that I've ever run for. So definitely going to be a couple of big days. And we've been starting to do more race-specific workouts. Like today, I did 3x2 mile, averaging around race pace, which, those are the kinds of workouts where you're like, I'm sorry, I'm supposed to do this for how many miles? it definitely feels a little intimidating. But I also know that from training, you're putting in miles, you're putting in the work. Like, race day is a totally different beast. You're going to be in your shoes. You're going to be, you know, on the roads. You're going to have the energy of the crowd. It's just like a totally different feel. So remembering, don't panic if you feel like your workouts are making the race pace feel more intimidating. You're getting in the effort and you're going to be ready come race day. My former teammate, Katie Rainsberger, who was also on the podcast at one point, just ran her first ever marathon in Berlin, and she ran 2:56, which is amazing. And she only trained for about 6 weeks. So she's my inspiration for New York, just hoping that I can have a good day. We don't really have any specific time goals, but of course, being the competitor that I am, in the back of my mind, I'm like looking at that 3-hour mark. But who knows? I have no idea how realistic that would be. So we'll see. But definitely just trying to lean into the training, have fun with it, and definitely practicing my fueling. A couple people recommended Never Second gels. So we're going to be trying those out this weekend, which I'm really excited about. They're nice because they have 30 grams of carbs. So my goal for race day is at least 60 grams of carbs per hour. So instead of having to carry 3 gels per hour, it's only 2. So it's a little bit better. But we'll see. I'm hoping we like them and we'll find out. So thanks everyone who sent over that recommendation. Speaking of New York, a couple of exciting announcements. One is that I'm going to be hosting a shakeout run with Chris Lee, who was on the podcast a little while ago. He's the owner of Kinesis Integrated in Boulder. He's a strength and conditioning coach. We're going to be hosting a shakeout run together in New York City on Saturday. So if you're going to be in New York, I will put a link to more information about that shakeout event. Chris has very generously offered to buy coffee for anyone who comes. So there's a little bit of incentive for you. I would love to see you all there, love to meet you all in person and go on a little run together. It's just going to be like a little easy 5K run around Central Park the day before the race. So come join me. I would love to have you there. It'd be super fun to see you all in person. And lastly, speaking of New York, as I've mentioned before, I am a charity runner for Track Girls, which is an incredible nonprofit organization helping to empower young girls in sport through mentorship programs and scholarships. And I am trying to raise $4,500 for them over the next 5 weeks. And I am about halfway, so still have a little ways to go. Would so greatly appreciate if any of you would consider donating anything. I know that the state of our financials in the US is not exactly conducive to donating a bunch of money right now. So please do not feel obligated, of course. But if that's something that you can do, like I said, would greatly appreciate any donations. Hedda's, the shoe that I am partnering with for the marathon, we are going to be doing a giveaway for donations. So for every $50 you donate, you get one entry to win a race day support package. That includes a t-shirt, a free pair of Hedda's shoes, which are so cool and very unique. They're made for women specifically. You get actually a race day planning session with me, so a Zoom call with me to plan out if you have a race coming up, how to fuel for that, and then also just some other little goodies from brands who support women's sports. So I will put, again, the link to that donation in the show notes. Would greatly appreciate anything, and thank you so much to everyone who has donated so far. Again, just so grateful for this community. So thank you all for supporting and being with me on this journey, and for all of you who are racing Chicago, best of luck. I'll be thinking about you, and I hope the weekend goes well. Okay, we are going to dive into today's questions. The first question, I love this one. I actually get this a lot, and I'm surprised I haven't answered this one yet. I realized I hadn't. This question says, why do runners get side cramps, and how can you avoid them? I've heard a lot of things as an athlete over the years, but I'm not sure what is scientifically true and what is myth. Thank you. Yes, love this question. So side cramps is sort of a general term for like side pain. And there are so many different potential causes of side cramps. One that I think people forget about is we actually have a muscle there called the psoas. And for some athletes, there can actually be like a condition with the psoas, some type of like tendinopathy with the psoas. So it actually doesn't necessarily matter what you're eating or drinking before the run, or not to say that it doesn't matter, but that actually might not be contributing to the side stitch. That actually could be a muscular issue. So for a lot of people, like seeing a PT, working on strengthening, even having that worked on, which like I've had my psoas worked on so many times. It's part of the hip flexor group. And it's definitely pretty painful. They have to kind of like dig pretty deep into your stomach, which can be a little bit uncomfortable. But for me personally, it's given me a ton of relief if I've ever had that happen. And similarly, like your diaphragm, which is also a muscle, sometimes can be cramping or can be getting caught or just sort of entrapped a little bit. So there are some more physical related issues that can cause side cramps aside from nutrition. So I do want to mention those. If you feel like you've tried everything under the sun for a side cramp and nothing is working, I highly recommend reaching out to a PT, maybe digging into that a little bit more to see if there's maybe exercises or even just like manual work that can be done to help give you some relief. From a nutrition standpoint, there's usually a couple of potential causes. One is definitely how close to the run are you eating and drinking? And as I've talked about before, if we're eating or drinking too much too close to the run, what happens when we start running is that blood flow moves away from our stomach, away from our GI tract. So anything that we've consumed that hasn't been digested just kind of sits there like a brick, because essentially those services that our body renders are put on hold while we're training. The priority of blood flow goes to our working muscles, our heart and our lungs and our brain, of course. So the idea of digestion, our body's like, yeah, we'll get to you later, which is why eating or drinking too close can definitely contribute to those side aches, and why I recommend eating about an hour before your runs. As I've talked about before, if that doesn't work with your schedule, let's say you're getting up at 4:30 in the morning to run at 5 o'clock, I do not expect you to get up at 3:30 or 4 in the morning. Having something a little smaller, like the fruit snacks, a honey stinger waffle, a simple granola bar, something that doesn't take very long to digest can help. You can digest about a gram of carb per minute. So if a bar is 20 grams of carbs, it's about 20 minutes, give or take. That's not an exact science, because of course some things absorb a little faster, digest faster or slower depending on what you're eating. But that can be kind of a helpful just like guideline if you're not sure how close to a run you can eat something. And then when it comes to the hydration piece, if we're chugging a lot of water or any liquid right before we go run, that can also kind of slosh around and cause some of that side stitch type feeling. So making sure you're tapering off your fluids about an hour before you run to help avoid that feeling. As I mentioned earlier, because a lot of times it is more of a muscular issue, electrolytes can definitely help, especially if you're running like in the afternoon or a really hot part of the day. You may be more likely to have side stitches happen at that point. So making sure you're having electrolytes pre-run can really help. again, if you're running first thing in the morning, you're probably going to be limited in terms of how much liquid you can actually get in. But around 8 ounces with like a noon tablet, a little bit of electrolyte powder, even a pinch of salt will do it, just to get you some hydration on board. And then if you're training in the afternoon, just really being mindful of putting electrolytes in your water leading up to that afternoon session so that you have those electrolytes on board to help reduce your risk of side cramping. Other things that can contribute to side cramping, as I mentioned, with slower digestion when you start running, anything that's high in fat, fiber, or protein. So you may be more likely to have a side stitch if you're having like a really high fiber or high protein snack or meal right before you go run. So just kind of being aware of your amount of carbs, color, and protein at lunch, for example, for afternoon training, or just making sure that snack, like I've said before, instead of a protein bar, is something more high carb, like a simple granola bar, and saving that higher protein option for post-run. And then if you are somebody who can't quite figure out what's going on with your side stitches, something I would recommend doing is whenever you have a side stitch, writing down what you ate or drank leading up to the run so you can look for patterns. I think I've shared this story before, but when I was coaching at the high school in Colorado, we had one girl who would only get side stitches on race days and we couldn't figure it out. And it turns out she was having a Celsius energy drink only before races. So that was what was giving her a side stitch, whether that was the caffeine or the ingredients in Celsius or drinking it too close to the race, who really knows? But that for her, once we stopped doing that, she didn't have any more issues with side aches. So for some people, it could just be, you know, like a pre-workout thing that you're doing that you haven't tried before, or haven't been thinking about. And that's why it can be helpful too, to look at patterns on days you have side aches versus days that you don't, to see if there's anything different that you're doing that you could potentially try out. That was a great question. Thanks so much for asking that. Okay, this next question says, "Hi Maddie, thank you so much for your podcast. It's such a valuable resource for all runners. I'm a high school cross country coach wondering what advice you have for helping athletes continue to run and train if they have a history or past of eating disorders or disordered eating. How do you balance training and for high school athletes the social experience of being a part of a team along with long-term health?" Yeah, I'm really glad this person brought this up because I think that depending on the practitioner and depending on the care team, a lot of times if they're not well versed in sports, may ask athletes to stop activity altogether. And the important thing I want to highlight from this question is like the social aspect of the sport. For a lot of young runners, being involved in a sport is huge. It's an outlet for them. It's a time they see their friends. It's just something that's so valuable to their overall social growth and development. And taking that away typically doesn't help the situation for a lot of reasons. Thinking too that if somebody is struggling with an eating disorder or disordered eating, that typically does root in some type of mental health issue. So whether that's anxiety or depression, perfectionism, something else going on, there's usually a mental health struggle happening in the background as well. So taking away something that brings them joy is definitely detrimental to an already low state mentally. So we don't want to do that altogether. I would recommend not entirely cutting anyone off of activity. That said, I think it's important to be smart about how we're approaching this with athletes. We don't want them to feel like we're punishing them for going through this. A lot of athletes feel like if we take running away from them, it feels like a punishment for asking for help or being open, which we absolutely don't want them to feel that way. I think a lot of it is well-intended. It's just that there's maybe a lack of information on how to handle these situations. And it may seem, oh, obviously, if we're not eating enough, we should stop running altogether. But what I see as a dietitian is that we can absolutely restore weight, restore periods, restore health with training. We just have to be smart about it. And as the athlete, you have to accept the fact that your training might just be a little bit lower volume. We don't need to take it away entirely, but we do need to be smart, because at the end of the day, the issue here is that our energy balance is low, meaning we have a lot more energy out than we do energy in. And of course, anytime we're training, we're increasing the amount of energy out. And if we're already struggling to hit our energy needs, to eat enough, to match what we're burning, then we're going to have even more trouble getting back into a state of energy balance if we keep our training level where it is, or if we were to increase training. So thinking about an injured athlete, for example, cross training, of course, can be tempting and you want to continue to move your body, which I think is great. But if we take that too far, now we're not really able to correct that energy deficit. Same goes for an athlete who's going through eating disorder recovery or disordered eating recovery. Training can still happen. We just have to make sure we're smart about it. And what's really interesting is some research studies that have been done on female athletes who've lost their period or struggling with disordered eating, incorporating just one rest day alone, an additional rest day. So if they were already taking a rest day, they added another one. If they weren't taking a rest day, they added one in. Just doing that alone can really help improve energy balance. And as I've mentioned before, energy balance is not just a single day. It's all throughout the week, the month, you know, etc. So I think being open to incorporating an off day, thinking about maybe reducing volume on, say, easy run days. Maybe workout days and long run days are still really critical, especially depending on where you are in the season. So maybe we can reduce volume on our easy run days, or we can cross train on easy run days instead of running and keep that amount of time the same. So again, not completely taking away activity, just modifying a little bit so that our energy expenditure is a little bit lower and it's easier for us to use nutrition to catch up to that a little bit. The stipulation for this for me is, if an athlete, if we're concerned about the medical clinical side for an athlete, they have an incredibly low heart rate, you know, there's something cardiovascular wise that we're concerned about, that is definitely a concern with eating disorders, is cardiovascular health. If there's anything medically that we're worried about, those are the situations where it's a hard stop. And that's where you definitely default to doctors, default to care teams, really making sure you're putting the overall health and well-being of this athlete first. It's more in those kind of middle ground situations where an athlete is getting help, they're working on improving their fueling, but maybe they're getting some pushback from people about how much they're training. So it is important to make sure you're keeping the care team in the loop, keeping parents in the loop, giving athletes a little bit of autonomy to make that decision for themselves, I think is hugely important. A really scary part about going through eating disorder treatment for athletes is a lack of control. You know, that's a lot of times part of the eating disorder itself is needing to control something when life feels out of control. So when you're going through treatment, there is sort of that sense of loss of control. So giving them a little bit more ownership of their training and asking what feels the most important to you, which days do you want to make sure you're present for? So it's not an open-ended, do you want to keep running? Because of course they're going to say yes, but giving them a little bit of boundary and also just kind of helping set those parameters, give them some guardrails so that they're being smart about it and we're also putting their health and well-being first. For coaches too, thinking about other ways you can involve them in the team. Maybe you need someone to help write down splits during a workout. Get them involved in other aspects of the sport and of the team so that they're not just kind of off on their own, missing out on this opportunity to be there with their friends. They're still very much involved, even if the amount that they're running looks different. And even if they're told they can't run altogether for medical reasons or whatever, kind of similar to an injured athlete, make sure they still feel like they're part of the team. Have them come to practices, have them, you know, see their friends and talk to people, stay involved and stay connected, I think is super important to support athletes during this time. Okay, this next question comes from Lizzie, and Lizzie says, how can I handle triggering comments from relatives or friends that are non-runners saying things like, I haven't had anything to eat today and it's 4 p.m. I can only eat half of a sandwich. I've had two meals today, so I'm done. I don't like to eat a lot. Meanwhile, they're not really focusing on their health. Yeah, Lizzie, this is such a great question, and I know this can be so triggering for everybody, right? Not just for athletes. It's funny, I had earlier today a presentation for like a corporate wellness thing, and even for people who are not athletes, something that I'm encouraging everybody to do is eat three meals a day and eat consistently throughout the day. Of course, for athletes, you know, what we're eating and the quantity that we're eating is going to look a little bit different. But that structure is really something I recommend for general health and well-being for everybody. So a lot of times when you hear people making these comments, it's rooted in diet culture, right? It's not rooted in fact or in what their body actually needs or wants. It's rooted in this deep-seated issue that if we eat less, we're doing a good job. And if we eat more, we're doing a bad job. I hear that rhetoric a lot. Like, oh, I did so good today. Like, that's not something we want to be telling ourselves when we don't eat. Or somebody would be like, oh, I wasn't hungry today. Yay, that's great. That means I ate way less. Well, a lack of hunger can be a sign that we're running on stress hormones or that we're under fueling, which is not good for our body. So I think it's important to take a step back in that moment and ask, why would somebody make this kind of a comment? Typically, it's because this is some misconception that they have that's rooted in diet culture in general, which as athletes and as humans, not something that any of us really want to partake in. The other thing to keep in mind is that if somebody is making a comment about food or about their eating patterns or about how they look, it's coming from their own insecurities and has absolutely nothing to do with you. Even if the comment was directed at you, it's coming from their own insecurities. Something that you're doing is triggering to them and they don't know how to handle it. They may not have the tools to work through it in that moment. And so it's sort of a reaction. It's a gut reaction on their part. But I think it's also important in those moments to then ask yourself, okay, did they really mean this about me? Or is this more of a reflection of them? And it's almost always a reflection of them. Even in your own life, like we've all judged people, right? Like if we're all being honest with ourselves, we have judged people. And most of the times when we are passing judgment on somebody, it's coming from one of our own insecurities. Maybe we say, wow, look at that person dancing in the middle of the street. Like for me, if I were to say that, it's coming from the fact that I would be way too self-conscious to do that. And I'm like, wow, props for them. They don't care what anyone thinks about them, but I don't feel that way. And that's a weakness of mine. And so maybe I would say that as kind of a reaction to something I personally struggle with. So that's kind of where those comments typically come from, is somebody's own struggles, not something that you're doing wrong. Another thing Lizzie mentioned is that these people are not runners. I mean, that right there tells you everything you need to know. They're not running. They're not training like you are. They don't have the same goals. They're not putting their body through the same things that you are. And so, of course, your fueling is going to look different, and it should. You know, they probably couldn't keep up with you for a mile. And that's because you train and you work hard. And that's not to say that that makes them any less than you, but it's just important to remember there's a difference, right? You are training. Your body has these really high energy demands. If you were to eat how they were eating, that would not set you up for success. That would not help you stay healthy or achieve your goals in sport or be the best choice for your body and your overall health. So again, reminding yourself, okay, what are my goals? What am I doing compared to them and their goals? And of course, I've talked about this a little bit before, where sometimes these comments are coming from runners who are training and who are doing what you're doing. And that can be a little bit different, you know, of a way to interpret it. I think remembering that nutrition is very individualized and what somebody else is doing doesn't mean that's what you should be doing. We also know we've all kind of been around people in the sport who are struggling with their relationship with food. And just because we see them doing that, even if they're running faster than us in that moment, doesn't mean that we should start going down that path. Because as I've mentioned before, it's not sustainable. It's not enjoyable. Typically, if runners are making comments like that about food, it's because they have food on their mind all the time. There's that food noise in the background that comes from restriction. So I would make the decision not to do what they're doing because I know that it wouldn't make me feel very good. And then it would make me struggle a little bit with my relationship with food. So in those moments too, kind of a fork in the road, who do you want to be in that moment? Do you want to be like this person who's restricting and struggling, or do you want to be the person who's taking care of your body and doing what you can to help you feel and perform your best? And then lastly, I think about, you know, the comments these people are making, like, I haven't had anything to eat today and it's 4 o'clock, or I can only eat half of a sandwich. If I didn't eat until 4 o'clock, nobody would want to be around me. I wouldn't want to be around myself. I would be absolutely miserable. I would be just hungry and irritable, and I wouldn't be able to focus. I'd have no energy. I just wouldn't feel like the best version of myself in any way. If I only ate half of a sandwich, I would also be starving. And I know what happens when I'm starving if I don't eat enough. I'm gonna go stand in the pantry and I'm gonna eat a bunch of random things and I'm not gonna feel great about it. Physically, it's not gonna feel very good. And that's gonna kind of send me down a path that's not great. So thinking about the things they're bragging about doing I'm like, great. If you don't want to eat till 4 o'clock, that's your call. I don't want to do that. I don't want to feel that way by 4 o'clock. I want to feel really energized, have consistent energy levels, feel in control when I'm around food, and feel comfortably hungry. And it's not a badge of honor to not eat. That's kind of the final thing I'll say. It's not a badge of honor to underfuel. It's not a badge of honor to restrict. It's not a badge of honor to go all day without eating. Those are all unhealthy behaviors. Those are all restrictive behaviors. And those all fit the pattern of disordered eating. So again, just kind of reminding yourself what it is at the end of the day, putting a name on it, and reminding yourself that's not what you want and that's not what your body needs. And it's going to help you be the best version of yourself if you focus on the things that work the best for you and not try to do what somebody else is doing. I don't want any of this to sound like I'm discounting the triggering comments that people can make. I know very well, being an athlete and a dietitian, I hear it all the time around people who, hear that I'm a dietitian and immediately jump right into the, oh, you'd be so proud of me, I didn't have breakfast this morning. I'm like, no, I'm not that kind of a dietitian. People just, that's kind of the default. That's just unfortunately the reality of our society. And it's a really deep-rooted issue that's really hard to undo that mentality. And it's just, it starts with you. You make your decisions, you're in control, you have free will. You don't have to do those things. And just surrounding yourself with people who don't make triggering comments, or even just setting boundaries with those people and saying, hey, it really makes me uncomfortable when you talk about food like that. Can you not? Or can we talk about something else? Just making a firm boundary is okay. It's not rude. It's protecting yourself. And it's something that you are setting a boundary for that actually might even help that person. That person may be like, oh, I didn't even realize I was doing that. Thank you for pointing it out. And it might help them improve their own relationship with food. Not that you should be doing anything to try to make somebody else do something. But you never know who you might help by just being yourself and doing what's right for you. Okay, our last question for today comes from Julia. Julia says, hi, Maddie. I find that every month when I get my period for the first 3 days, my running just takes a nosedive when it comes to any quality work. Easy runs are more or less fine, but workouts are a lot trickier. My legs feel very heavy, and paces which come easy just a few days ago seem pretty difficult. I'm thankful not to have cramps or any pain, but it stinks to have to adjust your plans just because you got your period. Other than modifying workouts and changing workout days that week, would you happen to have any tips on how to reduce the heavy-legged feeling during those days? Thank you. Yeah, Julia, this is a fantastic question, and definitely something that a lot of athletes struggle with. I've sort of talked about this in a previous episode, but research around the menstrual cycle and nutrition needs is so limited. We really just don't know very much about female physiology when it comes to differing energy needs, nutrient needs throughout the cycle. There's very limited research on that. So I think that's something to keep in mind. There's a lot of trends on social media about like cycle syncing. So like syncing your training or your eating to your cycle. Seed cycling was a big one, like eating different seeds at different points in your cycle to support hormone health. Those things sound great, but as I mentioned, the research behind them is slim to none. There's just really not a lot of research to back those things up. The research that we do have, what it does tell us would align with what you're feeling, Julia. So I've sort of gone through this before, just a little whirlwind going through the cycle. Which again, I personally was not taught this in school. We were taught you're going to get your period and whatever, but we were not taught like, what does that mean? What actually happens when we get our period and what's going on throughout the rest of the month? I thought it was just sort of like 1 week out of the month you're affected by it, but turns out hormones are changing constantly throughout the month leading up to your cycle. And simplifying it a little bit, we sort of have two phases. We have the follicular phase, which is the first half of your cycle between day one of your period and ovulation. So for most women, this is anywhere from like 12 to 18 days. And at this phase, it's considered the low hormone phase. And most women don't have any symptoms during those phases and feel their best. They feel really good. They just feel energized. They feel good about their bodies. Mentally, they're feeling good, all those things. After ovulation, then we start to see hormones rise. And this happens as our body's way of preparing for a pregnancy. If we were to become pregnant, we want to be able to support the implantation of the embryo and support the growth and development of the embryo. So all of our hormones start to rise, including estrogen and progesterone. With those hormones rising, that's when all the symptoms come on. So for a lot of women, we start to notice actually more like body dysmorphia around that time. So that's an interesting thing to point out too. If you're somebody you feel like half the month you like feel great about your body, the other half you don't, remind yourself that all of your friends who get their period look the same throughout the month. You do too. It's just your hormones that are changing your perception of how you look. I thought that was something that was really interesting. Another thing that we know happens with an increase in estrogen and progesterone is that sweat becomes more concentrated. So we actually lose more electrolytes during the second half of our cycle compared to the first half. We also tend to sweat more because our core temperature is higher. Again, if you're somebody who has like an Oura ring, you actually can see on there when your body temperature increases after ovulation. Again, that's in preparation for a potential pregnancy. So our core temperature is higher. So we tend to sweat more and sweat more often. And you may even notice sleep disturbances because of that, your core temperature being higher. We are also in more of a catabolic state in that second half of our cycle, meaning we're breaking down tissue more often. Research on this is pretty new, but we are seeing some evidence that calorie needs are higher the second half of your cycle. And then along those lines, carb needs also can be higher the second half of your cycle because it can actually be harder for our body to access carbohydrate stores in general, especially when we are running. So a couple things, you know, for Julia specifically, it sounds like you're noticing more fatigue during your run when you get your period. Chances are that's kind of lingering from the luteal phase where your hormones are higher, typically because we end up a little bit underfueled or maybe need a little bit extra carbohydrates, and we might feel that a little bit more when your period starts. Interestingly enough, physiologically, like I mentioned, we are most primed to perform our best on our period. That's when all of our hormones drop and we're actually physiologically more ready to go. So I think that's something else, just mentally like reminding yourself, okay, I'm on my period, maybe I feel a little bit uncomfortable, but that doesn't mean my body's not capable of pushing through or performing well, because it really is. And sometimes we get in our heads about that. And I know I certainly did in high school. And then when I learned that, oh, it doesn't actually matter, some of my best races I've been on my period, you know, it's easier just to kind of like let that roll off a little bit and just acknowledge like maybe you don't feel great, but physiologically you can still perform. Some of the things that you can try, Julia, to help improve energy levels, eating some extra carbs in the last few days leading up to when your period is supposed to start. So maybe just adding an extra serving at meals or snacks, maybe adding, you know, juice with your meals to add some more carbs in general, having an applesauce with your lunch in addition to what you're already eating, just to add some extra carbs in, especially pre-run, maybe upping your carbs a little bit pre-run. So if you normally have, you know, toast, maybe adding a banana with that, adding banana slices on top, you know, upping carbs a little bit. Along the same vein, considering adding more electrolytes into your water that week leading up to your period and the days before your period starts, just to help prevent more electrolyte losses. And then potentially just eating a bit more. So maybe adding an extra snack in there, maybe making your snacks a little more substantial or making your serving sizes a little bit bigger. Those could all definitely help offset some of those energy imbalances that can happen during luteal phase. I do want to mention that everyone is different. So like me personally, I don't notice that. I feel pretty much the same throughout my cycle. I don't notice that I have heavy legs or anything like that. For me, the biggest thing I notice is my sleep. I think mostly because of the core temperature. So something that I do is just up my magnesium that week before my period, and that seems to help. And then just be really mindful of hydration because that helps regulate your core temperature a bit better. And potentially even cranking down the AC a little bit that week. It just helps me sleep a bit better. So everyone's going to be different, and that's where research can be a little tricky, because just because something's happening physiologically doesn't mean you feel it. And so not getting in your head and not being like, oh my gosh, wait, do I need to do all these things differently? You know, no, you don't. If you feel good and you feel consistent throughout your cycle, chances are you don't need to do anything differently. But if you're like Julia and you notice those differences, it's probably worth trying out some of those strategies to see if you feel better. I do think the last thing I want to say about periods in general is it's important to know that you should not be suffering through your periods. They should not be insanely heavy or painful. You shouldn't be able to not get out of bed. Like, you should be able to function on your period. And I think that's something a lot of women aren't told and just kind of suffer in silence. Having really miserable, painful periods can be signs of other things going on, including hormonal imbalances. I've had a lot of athletes who are under fueling actually see their periods get more comfortable by eating more. So a couple of things to think about too, if you do struggle with periods, it's always worth following up with your doctor, potentially having some testing done, just ruling out anything else that might be causing you to have miserable periods. Because I think as women, we're kind of taught like, yeah, it sucks for you. Good luck, get through it. But it doesn't have to be like that. And it shouldn't be like that. So advocating for yourself a little bit in that space can be helpful. Thanks so much for these amazing questions. And I hope everyone has a great weekend. If you're doing your long runs, we're all in it together. So let's go get it. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to submit a question to be answered on air at the next Q&A episode, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.